Blog Talk Radio.
All right, I will give Evan a call. Can you hear us?
I'm here. Did you get Evan?
Yep.
Hey, Rick.
Evan.
How's it going, man?
All right. John, do you notice Evan's the first guest with a deeper voice than mine?
Crazy.
All right. Oh, man. We gotta get John. We should call Johnny Ace, Evan. Put him on the phone. That'd be pretty funny.
Call who?
Johnny Ace. You know John Laurinaitis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know John, you met him before, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, several times. He's got more of a raspy voice,
I think.
Yes,
raspy, exactly. All right, so John, where are we at, my man?
Ready to go whenever you are ready.
All right, so Evan, I always do like a couple-minute intro, and then I'll bring you in, and it'll be obvious where that is, of course.
Did we actually start our conversation off talking about one half of the Dynamic Dudes?
God, John, I forgot. Evan knows way more about pro wrestling. Evan's forgotten more about pro wrestling than I've ever known.
That's awesome.
I just thought about that. I don't think anybody's ever started out talking about John Laurinaitis.
Well, he's the other way. Wait, don't tell me. Hold on.
Or as I like to call him, John Laurinaitis.
John Laurinaitis. Wait, don't tell me. The other Dynamic Dude... Oh, I'm not coming up with it, man. Who was it?
Come on, Shane Douglas.
Fuck. And wasn't there a match with those two guys and Undertaker and Danny Spivey when, like, Spivey just beat the shit out of them?
No, that was a guy called Black Mountain, or no, what was his name? He was an enhancement talent called, one guy was... I could have these names wrong, but one guy was something Wolf and the other guy was something Mountain, Black Mountain or Man Mountain, but he wasn't that big. I mean, he was real small and he just wouldn't sell anything.
Dude, how do you know this shit? How do you even know this, man?
I don't know. And I could have those names totally wrong, but I remember watching that match years ago and the guy literally sold nothing. I mean,
he beats the shit out of him, too, and he doesn't sell. It's so weird, yeah.
John, you know this one also. I have no idea what you guys are talking about right now. That's hysterical. Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty sad to see. It was amazing to see because the guy literally, he took even like a power bomb and like tried to get up from it. We're just going, come on.
Yes,
man.
Yes.
Come on,
yep.
Man.
Yep.
Was this Spider or Taker?
Oh,
no,
it was Spivey.
Spivey wouldn't like that at all, man.
It was the Spivey and Sid combination.
Oh, Spivey and Sid. Okay, not even Callaway. Okay, cool.
Right,
wow.
Because that was when Sid did something like he got injured, and that's when Callaway came in and replaced him.
Man, I can't believe you know all this stuff. You know, not to put you on the spot, Evan. Before we go on the air here, but now I'm going to put you on the spot for a second. So, you know, John is my producer, and he has a company called the Two Man Power Trip Podcast Empire, but it's also known as the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. They produce, they have their own show, Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling, which is considered one of the top pro wrestling podcasts. Truly one of the top ones. And then he also produces like Francine's and Shane Douglas and Dr. Tom and stuff like that. But here's the putting you on the spot thing. You should, if you're ever so inclined, you should do his show sometime. Because you guys...
Oh, trust me, the little bit of wrestling, talk we just did is not, I couldn't even, it'd be like amateur hour for me. I mean, I couldn't keep up with them. There's no way. I know little bits and pieces of stuff.
Yeah.
I couldn't talk about the Attitude Era in the WWE probably because I was familiar with it. I couldn't talk about many. I mean, I don't know.
Old school Southern stuff, huh?
I'd probably be more lost than you think I would.
All right. I don't know. I still think you know more than I do. Not that I know that much, but in any case.
which is a compliment coming from you, Rick.
All right, cool.
Does he know that I trained with you or no?
Yeah, we did talk about that before. Yeah, okay. And I think I told him. I remember you having two matches, Alcatraz and Spanky. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That's accurate?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, and I remember your match with Spanky. It was really good, actually.
Well, I remember nearly throwing up before both of them, so.
Well, you know what? Thank you for reminding me. I forgot that, but I'll be sure to bring that up during the interview.
You're nice.
I know, right? Exactly. That'll be cool. That's a good piece of info that everybody needs to have, no doubt about it. All right, well, you know, on that note, I guess let's just we'll get into it. I'll start my little intro spiel, and then I'll bring you in.
Okay.
John, are we ready?
We are ready.
Hey, everybody. It's Rick Bassman here for Talking Tough. Doing our first interview during this craziness. It's known worldwide now as the coronavirus. I suspect that we may talk a little bit about that today. Not that I'm up on that, but our guest today has a very unique view on everything that has to do with current affairs and stuff that's happening in this world. He's not a politician. You're going to be amazed when I tell you who this guy is and that he has a much better take on world events than just about anybody that I know, or an amusing take, certainly. So I always like to say at the top of the podcast that we are doing the show from up here in the forest of Maui, and I bring this up for two reasons. One is we're isolated up here, and I live with my four pit bulls, just me and them, the five of us. And because we're isolated, if a car or a person comes anywhere within a quarter mile of this place, my dogs are going to explode. So you might hear a lot of barking suddenly out of the middle of nothingness, and I guess I'll apologize for that in advance. I also bring this up because it allows me to plug the one thing that I love to plug every episode, and that is the Bully Dog Rescue Coalition. That's our nonprofit where we are working our asses off to save pit bulls everywhere and just better their reputation. That's bullydogrescue.com. Please check us out there. Help support us and support the four women that are running the pit bull sanctuaries around the world that we're promoting through the website and through our nonprofit. So let me get back to our guest. I've had some amazing, interesting, outrageous, crazy people on the show, and it's always a search to figure who's next, who can entertain, not only entertain our audience, but who's got something to say. So my guest today is, I would go say, a pretty close personal friend of mine. We can get his opinion on that in a moment. And this is the first guest. I was telling my producer, John Pozorowski, who's on the line, he's from the two-man power trip, that this is the first interview I have not put any notes down for at all. And it's not out of laziness. I like to prepare. It's two things. One, I feel like there's an easy rapport. And two, for a guy who was incredibly famous at a point in time, there's almost nothing on the internet. It's pretty bizarre, and I want to ask him about that. Our guest today is my good friend, a guy who would have been, in my opinion, one of the top pro wrestlers in the world had he decided to give it a go. He is an all-around intelligent, interesting, funny guy. He was known far and wide as Joe Millionaire. I know him a lot better as my friend, Evan Marriott. Evan, welcome on to Talking Tough.
Would have been one of the top pro wrestlers in the world.
You know what's funny? Let's address that right out of the gate. Okay. Just so you don't think I'm working the audience here and trying to hype things for this podcast. And we'll talk a little bit about pro wrestling today because it was part of your life. It was part of mine. Mm-hmm. I think you know, Evan. I wrote a book called Little Big Man. Now it sounds like I'm plugging something else. And right. In that book, in the wrestling chapter of it, I have an insert, and the insert is called The Five That Got Away. And I go into this long meditation describing five different guys and how had they gone ahead with their pro wrestling training, in my opinion, would have been five of the very top guys in the world. And you are absolutely one of those five guys. So that said, I stand by the statement I made during the introduction. It's right there in black and white in print.
Well, Wow, Rick, I really appreciate that. I've never. I mean, I don't even really. And this might not shock you, but I don't even talk about my training with you or with anyone else unless somebody brings it up. I mean, I just don't even. It was just kind of like the show as well. Unless somebody brings it to my attention, I don't really talk about it much. And not a lot of people know that I was involved with you and trying to train to become to go to WWE. So that's really cool of you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, so I've never shared that with you before then, that I thought you had that level of potential?
Well, no, I mean, you had kind of said it, but I mean, when someone says that, you just kind of think, okay, well, you know, he's just saying that. It's like one of those, oh, shucks, he's just saying that to me. It's so good at the moment.
You say that to all the girls, right? That sort of
yeah,
thing.
Exactly.
Right. No, that's funny. And for those out there who are not quote unquote inside or know the lingo of pro wrestling, there's a phrase called putting somebody over, where
yeah.
you know, you're basically extolling their virtues. Sometimes it's
right.
it's sincere, sometimes it's not. But you know, to put over, and again, you're right. Not many people know, I think, that you took a foray into the wild world of pro wrestling. So to
no.
put Evan over for a second. You know, I hope you don't mind. Guys, by the way, I'm going to keep saying this over and over. For a guy who is so famous, Evan truly is probably the anti of wanting ever to be famous and very humble at the same time. So, Evan, I'm going to put you over and embarrass you for a second. But let me ask you this. You're a student of pro wrestling. For a guy to be a star in pro wrestling, what qualities does he need?
To be a star?
Yeah.
Well, okay. I'm gonna really disappoint you, Rick, because I'm gonna tell you what I've heard and what I agree with. How's that?
That's fine.
They can work around your working ability can be limited, but if you're not a good talker, now I might be totally going off on a whole nother. But the guys that couldn't put promos and weren't good talkers, they never quite made it. I just think of the greatest performers or wrestlers that I can remember back in the day just being really good talkers and really good workers. But, man, if they were good on the mic and they could put butts in the seats, as they said, you know, that was half the battle. Two-thirds of the battle. Am I wrong on that? Or?
No, you're absolutely right. I think you're missing a couple of key points, not you personally, but let me fill them in. So you said being good in promos on the mic. I definitely thought in your limited amount of time you spent with us that you had really good aptitude for that, and I think you would have gotten even better and better. You were very John. I know John hates this because he's a humble, shy guy also. Our producer, John, are you on the line, John?
Yes, sir.
John produces the two-man power trip of wrestling. He's far more expert in the world of pro wrestling than I am. So I'm going to bring you into this discussion for a second here. John, it was interesting having Evan in the ring because, you know, you guys walk through the door. And I hate to even bring up the name John Cena, but when Cena walked through, I mean, you can see the physical gifts. It was pretty obvious. So Evan, what are you, 6'5", 6'4"? Evan, are you there?
Yeah, I lost you, Rick.
Oh, Evan, what are you, 6'5", 6'4"? How tall are you?
6'4". Yeah, around there. Six, just depends on the shoe. Say 6'4".
So 6'4". And probably your weight at that time was what, 240, 250?
Actually, at that time, I was 260.
You were too.
Shredded
both. I remember that.
I had a little hamburger helper in me, though.
Okay, fair enough. Whatever it took. I know the hamburger helper. We all imbibed in hamburger helper back in those days. I hear you loud and clear. Didn't do for me. I think what it did for you, but that's all right.
I don't want to get you off the subject, but I hear people bring it up, and I hear people look down their nose and stick out their lower lip at that stuff. I tried it. I was on it for a while. I really enjoyed it, but I've never been a big fan. This is going to throw people for. I've never been a big fan of it being illegal. So it's kind of like it's like smoking with certain age. It's just like your smoking years is what I mean. Just smoke all you want, you know. But people take offense to it because secondhand smoke bothers people, steroids are not going to bother somebody else. You know what I'm saying? It's just what you're putting
in. That's an interesting way to look at it. I never thought of it like that. No, and I hear you. So let's say you were on it for a very limited period, which is fine. But the point I was making was, dude, when you walked through the doors that first day at 6'4", 6'4 and a half, whatever you were, and 260, and you had a very symmetrical physique, you looked like, you know, the poster child for the Vince McMahon pro wrestler movement at that point in your life. And, you know, and you weren't ugly either. You know, all you got to do is look at the, you know, cover of Us magazine from back in those days and whatnot. You had the personality. Your promo work had great potential. And you may not put yourself over in the following manner, but you were very, very natural in the ring. I think you had all of two matches, if I remember correctly. One was against Brian Kendrick, also known as Spanky. The other was Alcatraz. And, man, they were both a lot better than they had any right to be for a guy who had two pro wrestling matches. So, in my mind, you had literally every ingredient that was necessary to make it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I'd be stupid if I said or told you that I look back on that and said maybe leaving was a good idea or quitting. And I don't even know, I can't even remember why I quit. I think I moved and I was having some financial issues. At that time I didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And I had moved to Orange County, which is where which was stupid because that's where we were in Huntington, right? We were at LA Boxing. We were training out of there.
Yeah, exactly right. Yes.
And then we moved over to the Gold's Gym, I remember. They had a big room there where we trained.
Yep. Gold's Gym in Huntington Beach. Yep.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this much. I look back on that and I think, well, where would I be right now if I had pursued it? And, you know, with your connections over at OVW and the WWE with John Laurinaitis, I mean, who knows where it would have gone? I mean, you can only wonder now. I'm 45 and I'm in a lot of pain. So
do you regret not having you grew up as a fan. I know that. You know a lot about pro wrestling from a fan standpoint. Do you regret not having moved forward with it, or is it just, you know, one thing I know about you also, and I don't want to say this the wrong way, but it seems to me like, in a good way, that you don't get attached to things. I would say you just don't care, and I say that in a good way. But how do you feel about pro wrestling? Do you regret not having moved forward, or are you cool with it?
Well, I'll tell you one of my biggest regrets. This is actually probably a story not many people know. And like I said, I told you earlier, I don't really think about this stuff unless somebody brings it up, and you're bringing it up. So I'll talk on it. I don't do a lot of interviews either, Rick. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I do know that, and I appreciate you doing this one. I was talking to our sometimes very good mutual friend Tom Howard and told him I was going to ask you to be on. And Tom's like, Evan will never do it. Evan doesn't do interviews. So I appreciate you being on, man.
Well, I'd help you any way I could, Rick. And I at the time, you remember Ed Connors?
Absolutely, of course. One of the founders of Gold's Gym worldwide. Yeah.
Yeah, Ed Connors had Shane McMahon's ear, and this was after I'd done the show. So the show went on from like I think the first week in January, and it ended in right. March, and Ed had reached out to me and said, Evan, I don't remember Ed's voice.
Ed had that voice, and
he was very distinct.
He said, Evan, I talked to Shane McMahon, and I didn't know if I should have done that or not, but he said he was very interested in you calling him and maybe working, you know, with them for like a WrestleMania thing.
And I said, well, did you know about this, Rick?
You know what? If I did, I don't remember it now. So let's say I'm hearing this for the first time. Go ahead.
I was another one of those things where, okay, Ed, whatever. And I should have not doubted him because I knew he knew a lot of people. But I did. And one day, out of nowhere, I got a call, and it was Shane McMahon. And he said, hey, you know, I talked to Ed Connors, and he said he knew you. And again, Rick, this was at a time where I – was being where people were calling my manager Randy, and I was the flavor of the month, is all I can call it.
Let me give you some quick context, and I apologize, I interrupt a lot during these things, but quick context. You've mentioned a few times now the show. I know what you're talking about. I assume most people who know you do, but let me expound a bit. So the show is Joe Millionaire. This was a ridiculously monster hit on Fox Network, probably one of the first true, quote-unquote, reality shows out there, with a final episode that was viewed by, I believe, 36 million people, which is just an obscene number. It landed you on the cover of magazines like Us and People and whatnot. So, yeah, I imagine you were getting some calls. So go ahead, please.
And, Rick, in your defense, you're right. You have to expand on that because I'm not going to. Because after 15 years, I call it the show. I don't call it Joe Millionaire. It just makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. And I can get a little deeper into that later. But I did a lot of things. And I was on Howard Stern show 3 times. And I, went on Regis and Kelly. And I was exposed to a lot of things and had the good fortune to experience a lot of things. So I'm just assuming this was kind of a something that Shane was interested in, getting me in there to maybe work an angle at WrestleMania. It's like, because every year they have a celebrity, for WrestleMania. And to him, that was going to be, something that they were going to, but the problem was that the storyline he pitched to me was that I would have this angle with Trish Stratus where I slapped her. And
I remember this now. Yes, of course.
Remember this?
Go ahead, please. Yes.
And I just, the minute he said that, I just cringed because I thought, I've already got some heat. There you go. There's a wrestling term. I've already got some heat from the public because I'm getting this, you lied to the girls about who you were and all this stuff. And I just thought, man, the last thing I need to do is to go, even though they know it's, scripted and it's just gladiator theatrics. I can't be out there slapping a chicken, at WrestleMania. I can't do it. And I had said something to him about, well, Shane, that's very interesting. I didn't poo-poo it. I just said, that's very interesting. What do you think about this? I'm Evan Marriott. I'm Joe Millionaire. Who do you have on your roster right now that literally is brags about being the 60-minute man, and he's the kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, jet flying, limousine riding son of a gun? I'm like, how about he takes me under his wing and teaches me how to be a real millionaire, teaches me how to dress, teaches me everything that they were trying to teach me on the show. But he actually liked that. He was like, that's an interesting little concept. And I told, I believe I told Missy Halperin at Fox, who was their director of talent relations.
I remember Missy, sure, yeah.
And she said, I don't think so. She didn't say no, but she said, Evan, I don't think that our standards and practice, because I was under contract with them. They held me under contract.
Yeah, Fox had quote-unquote control over you at that time, and that's right.
Yeah, for 2 years. And I just kind of walked away from it and said, okay, well, whatever. And looking back on it, and this is where I'm going with this, looking back on it, when people do things, it's like that ask for forgiveness instead of permission type thing?
Yep.
Looking back on it, I probably should have just never said anything to anybody, shown up at WrestleMania, or shown up at whatever Raw or whatever they wanted to do to start building the program. As long as it didn't have to do with flapping Trish Stratus, that was where I was going to draw a line. I wasn't going to do something like that.
Well, you know what I love about that? As far as, whether you had decided to show up or not, I mean, we all have our lives are all full of, could-haves and would-haves, of course, and who knows what would have happened. But what I love about this is, to me, this illustrates, it's a perfect illustration of how I look at you as a guy who just doesn't care. And again, I mean that in a good way. And here's what I mean. You grew up as a huge fan. I know that. Your friends know that. And,
right.
And John, if you're on the line still, think about this, man. Here's a guy who
I swear to God, John's probably, hanging from a noose. I swear. He's probably like
no way. No way. I love it.
So, think about this. Guy grows up as a monster fan, and now he's getting a phone call from Shane McMahon asking him to be featured on WrestleMania with Trish Stratus, and he's saying no. Dude, you got to love that. Because it doesn't fit your morals, and I think that's great. I love it.
But it's more, like, it's more than that, Rick, because you got to understand this wasn't, not that I would do it now, and I'm not saying that, but you got to understand, I was just under a lot of stress back then, just wanting to get away from the media, not wanting to do interviews, not just kind of wanting to, and here's the thing, it was odd to say that that's what I wanted to do after that show, but it wasn't, I wanted to be, if I was going to be, you know, recognized for something, and this is what I've said to everyone that's ever asked me, if I wanted to be recognized for something, recognize me for something that is going to mean something at the end of the day, that you're going to take home and go, God, you know, Evan really, you know, that cancer drug he invented, man, that's really wiped out cancer. Or, you know, Evan had the most rushing yards this season. You know, I didn't do shit but show up and take out 21 girls, and I didn't even really do that. And I got all of this recognition for it and fame and money, and I felt guilty about it. I mean, I can't be any more blunt than that. I felt
this is a shoot. I know it really does bother you, doesn't it?
I carry around a lot of guilt for people that are out there every day busting their ass. Like, we got it going on right now with coronavirus. People are out there just trying to make ends meet, and here comes this freaking, you know, pandemic, and it's gonna obliterate their savings. It's gonna and I've always thought like that, because I came from a family where my dad worked five jobs, and my mother that's a tell a family secret, but when I was a kid, when I was a toddler, my mother was a bricklayer. How many people come on and tell you that about their mother? My mother laid bricks. She was a mason to make extra money when I was, you know, 3-4 years old while my dad was off working. I mean, it was just like, I came from a working family, so I knew what it meant to work hard, and I felt really guilty being handed this money. And Rick, I just to really hit the point home, and I've never really told anybody about this. I might have said it in an interview or two. I was making mad money on appearances. I mean, money that would make you violently ill if you knew what, I mean, well, I could tell you, you know, you've been around this stuff. I'd make 15 grand to show up for a 4-hour signing at a mall. And then 2 days later, I'd be at a strip club judging a bikini contest for 10 grand cash.
Yeah, and getting paid to go to the strip club, right, and have all the hot strippers follow over you, right. That's a rough gig, man. I know.
Yeah, and this is no shit. And John, I don't know if you're still on, but this is no shit. I mean,
yes.
You know, my manager would negotiate whoever was the next town I was going to. Say it was, and I did a thing for Yum Brands that they had to fly their private jet to come get me. So I'd get on a private jet in John Wayne, and I'd fly out to, I don't know, St. Louis, and I'd do a signing for $15,000, and they'd fly me back. And this happened overnight. So and this whole time, you know, I would just be like, how did this happen to me, like, this quickly? And we don't want to get off track here, but getting back to I look back on it now, Rick, and I see, you know, I don't watch wrestling anymore, but say up till about 8 years ago, I would watch, you know, the Hall of Fames and stuff, and they would do like a celebrity inductee, and I would just sit there and look, Rick, and I'd go, if I'd done that WrestleMania, maybe one of those days I would have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. And then to your acknowledgement earlier, I never gave myself that much credit, but maybe I could have been that one celebrity that wasn't Pete Rose, or wasn't what's the guy from Cleveland? What was it?
Drew Carey.
Drew Carey.
Well, Lawrence Taylor, even. Yeah, none of these guys could work.
Or any of the celebrities.
Right.
If I had worked an angle in WrestleMania, and I'm not tooting my own horn, Rick, but do you think? And this, you're the perfect person to ask, because you saw me. I would have probably been the one person, TV celebrity. I don't consider myself a celebrity, but TV personality that could have actually worked a match.
If you had kept your head in the game and you did not get injured, you, in my opinion, again, would have been in the upper 20 percentile of big guy workers in the business.
I'm not saying I would have gone out there and had a Savage Steamboat match. Okay, that's not what we're not talking about.
You could have some very good matches, man. I have no doubt of that.
I could have gone out there and the crowd would have been like, Jesus, I didn't know Evan. I mean, what, we didn't know he could do this. So we didn't know he was, you know, I look at it like that. It was an opportunity missed. And it was because, you're right, A, I probably didn't care, and B, I was trying to be the good talent, as they call it. You know this, the good, they call them, you could make a difference. You are, if you're on TV, you're called talent. So I was trying to be the good, dutiful talent for Fox, and it came back to bite me in the ass because I gave up a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, we all know they gave you the vehicle of exposure in the first place, which is probably what put those opportunities in front of you. So it's a double-edged sword, certainly. But, man, I would have liked to see what would have happened. And I don't want to, you know, John will tell you, we keep invoking poor John into the conversation. John will tell you, I do everything I can during these interviews to stay away from pro wrestling, yet I keep bringing it back to the subject. So I want to ask you, you mentioned Ric Flair earlier. And that was a cool program you pitched. You and Rick became friends for a while, did you not? Evan, did we lose you? John, are you there?
Yep.
Is Evan there?
Let me see if we lost and I can get him back.
Okay.
You there,
Evan? You there?
Yeah. Does that do anything to your
no,
podcast?
No, easy edit.
No, John can edit that. No problem.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, no worries. So what I was saying to John, to we'll start again. So Evan is John, poor John, who I keep invoking here, will tell you, I always try to steer away from pro wrestling in this podcast, but now I'm in the mode, so I've got a couple more things I want to bring up before we move on. You mentioned Ric Flair earlier.
I apologize. That's just my connection to you, Rick.
No,
I
don't want to keep bringing it up. It's not you. It's me that's doing it. But so I'm apologizing to you and going against my usual grain here. But you had mentioned Flair earlier. You and Rick became hangout buddies for a while, did you not?
yeah.
All right, give us a good. All right, that laugh says it all. Do you have a good Ric Flair story for us? You don't mind telling?
I don't. It's not a. I mean, yeah. I it's nothing that nobody already knows, and it's
Oh, come on, Evan. Say this is a Talking Tough exclusive, and then break it on us.
Well, no, Rick, but here's the thing. I told you, well, I talked to you, and I'm not dodging this question. I'm going to answer it, but I talked to you, I think I talked to you, what, a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, and I told you I listened to podcasts. Oh, they're entertaining, you know, when I'm in the truck, and I just learned, you know, certain people, you know, like Jim Ross and guys like that. And sometimes I'll listen to these podcasts, and I'll, and John, you know this. I'm not going to say anything you don't already kind of know. And I listen to these podcasts and I hear these stories and I'm like, you know, person just saying this to you know, just to put themselves over, or just to make it sound like, you know, they've got a good story on somebody. Nothing that I've got on anybody is anything that's secretive. I mean, no one, you know, but it was just an odd. I had a publicist that was. She was Flair's publicist, and I had her for about a cup of coffee.
It wasn't Melissa, was it?
No, she was Chris Jericho's publicist and Triple H's publicist and Ric Flair's publicist. And I knew that Flair had been wrapped in there somewhere because she was Triple H's publicist, and I figured that Triple H had brought Flair along. And her name's going to hit me. But anyway, and I met Rick. Rick, I met Ric Flair backstage when I went back there with you at Anaheim Pond. You and I and Shu that's the Matt Wiese, who was Luther Reigns,
Horseshoe, our good friend.
You and I believe he was there, and you said, Evan, we're going over to the Anaheim Pond. You want to go? I'm like, yeah, I'll take it.
So we went over there, and I saw Rick. And Rick actually said to me, he goes, I've watched your show when I can. And I thought that was just like, did you watch my show? And shit. Triple H had a big shit-eating grin on his face. And then I ended up doing a show. And, John, you might remember the show. It was called Morning Pizza. Do you remember Morning Pizza?
Yeah, it sounds very, very familiar.
It was on ESPN.
Cold Pizza. Cold Pizza.
Cold Pizza. You're right. Cold Pizza. I'm sorry. Morning Pizza. I'm thinking of Morning Joe.
Right.
And I saw, and I walk in, and I and Rick is there. And he had remembered seeing me at the pond. And he gets up and shakes my hand, and we talk. We're in the green room. And he said, Evan, I'm going to be in Santa Monica. Or I'm going to be in L.A. on this such and such a day. And so long that I can't remember. And he goes, here's my number. Call me on this, and we'll go out. And he ended up being the viceroy in Santa Monica. And he just said, hey, I'm going to be here for 4 or 5 days. Get a room, and we'll go out and grab drinks. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. I mean, this what turned out to be just dinner with he and his wife, and his wife was flying back to Charlotte, and he just wanted to find a party partner. And I was dating a girl at the time named Lisa Ligon, who was not bad to look at. She was pretty easy on the eyes, and she had some friends, and we all went. And I don't even know the name. I think I can't remember the name of this club. It might have been Hush or Shush or I don't know what the hell it was. And it was in L.A., and then we went out there. And I'll tell you the Ric Flair story that no one's ever heard. We were all at a table, and this place – I got to figure out the name of this club. But it was Hugh Hefner used to go there on Friday and Saturday nights, and he had his girls with him. And we're all at a table, and we've got a nice selection of girls at our table because Lisa ran a dance group called Perfect Angels, and I think they're still around, and they do these dance – They're like Harley Davidson cheerleaders. They go around all these big Harley, and she's actually made a good career out of it. And we have
I'm looking at her. I googled her while we're on the phone. She is definitely not horrific looking by any means.
No. And a sweetheart. And a sweetheart. I mean, an absolute sweetheart. Not one of these girls that thinks her shit at stake. I mean, she is just as genuine as it comes.
And right under her name, under related searches, it says Lisa Ligon husband, and your photo is there. I kid you not. Anyway, I thought you might want to know that.
Well, I never married her. So.
Fair enough.
But
that's what it shows.
Anyway, this is a great Ric Flair story, and this is not a knock on Rick. This is how he really believed in who he was. I went over because I had already been to the Playboy Mansion one or two times. And Lisa was always in my ear going, you need to do this, you need to do this. And not in a bad way, but she was always like, Hugh knows that you were at the Playboy Mansion. You need to go over and say, I had a really good time at the party. And I didn't know. I just said, I had a good time at the party last party. Whatever. Just go over and say hi, right? So I did that. And I'm looking at her like, all right, I'll go over there and thank him for inviting me. And that's what it was. Thank him for inviting me. She goes, because then you'll get another invite back. He'll make sure, because he hand-selected those people at that time, right? I didn't know.
This is Hugh Hefner we're talking about?
Hugh Hefner, right. So I go over to Hugh. Now, Rick and the girls are sitting at the table. I go over to Hugh Hefner and I say, it's not your last party, midsummer night, whatever the fuck. And I didn't say it like that. But I said, and I just want to thank you for the invite. It was a lot of fun. And hope you're having a good night. And he looked at me and he said, hey, thank you so much. And he said, he said this. If God is my witness, he said, I see you over there with Ric Flair. And he knew him.
That's awesome.
And I said, yes, sir, I am. And he goes, tell him to come by and say hi to me. I'd love to talk to him. I said, well, I'll do that. I go back to the table, and I sit down. And I'm sitting next to Rick. And I said, Rick, I said, I was just over there. I said, and I didn't know. I said, Hugh Hefner just told me, he recognized you and said, if you want to come by and say hi. You know what Rick said to me?
Goes, I think I have the correct guess, but go ahead. Or should I guess?
He said, if he wants to talk to me, he can come over here.
That's what I figured. Oh, man, that's awesome.
John, I wanted to slide under that table. My 6'4" body wanted to slink under that table. I was so embarrassed that I had said that to Ric Flair because I literally felt like I had just offended him. And I didn't know. I wasn't thinking, right? But anyway, so that was a one-night outing. And then the one you guys probably want to hear is we were sitting there by the pool, and he had just had shoulder surgery. And he just looked over at me, and he had known that I knew guys like Matt, Rick. He knew that I knew Matt, and he knew, you know, that I had kind of known a couple of the guys backstage, like John. So I think he was comfortable asking me this. And Tom knows this story. But he just looked over at me like it was no big deal. And he goes, hey, I can't reach. Mike goes, I'm having a hard time with my shoulder. And he was. I mean, he wasn't fake. He was a damn good, you know, he was damn good at faking it. Because everywhere we went, he looked like he was really not doing well with his shoulder. And he goes, can you stick me? And I said, yeah, sure. What do you got? And he goes, well, I got it up in the room. So my claim to fame is that I stuck, I think it was Deca. Yeah, I think I stuck Ric Flair with Deca in his hotel room. There's my Ric Flair.
Well, that's a visual I'm going to try to not carry
was,
with for too long, but I appreciate
but,
that.
But Rick, I mean, you know, not in a lot of guys, you know, that were back then that we were all training, a lot of guys didn't like needles. And, you know, with my heroin addiction back, no, I'm kidding. No, with my, I just didn't bother them. I don't like razors, so I would have never been good at, you know, getting color. But needles never bothered me. So just a lot of guys would say, can you stick me? Because I just can't do it. And I'd be like, yeah.
No,
and I would
sure.
always tell them.
I remember it well. Sure.
But I would always tell them, you know, because a lot of the dumber guys would mix the anabolic and the, you know, and the androgenic steroids, which one's an oil and one's a, you know, water-based. And they would, you know, they would use separate syringes. And I'd be like, no, bozos, you put it all in one syringe and you do it in one shot. It's like ripping a Band-Aid off. You know what I mean? You don't shoot this one and then shoot that one and then shoot that one. You do it all in one go. John, am I scaring you?
Nope, not yet.
Am I scared? Okay, because you probably didn't expect this out of Joe Millionaire, did you?
No, definitely not. I'm shocked.
I'm shocked
right now.
I'm messing with you. That was my thing. I stuck Ric Flair, and over the years after that, then we just, like a lot of people, he's around, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just think he lives a life that a lot of people kind of fade from, and I just lost contact. I talk with his ex a lot, though. Not a lot. I talk to Tiffany, one of his exes, every once in a blue moon.
Yeah, well, we drift apart. I mean, you and I lost touch for numerous years also, and we
right.
seem to get back in touch, which is great. Yeah, and that's how life goes, man. So
John,
I want to go
just
back.
Real quick, can I tell a story on you?
Of course.
Yes, go
so
for
John,
it.
John, I live in the same apartment that – does John know Tom?
Oh, wait, did you say a story – you told me a story about what? I'm sorry?
Does John know Tom?
John knows of Tom Howard, certainly.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. But anyway, Tom was my roommate.
Evan, I'm sorry, real quickly for our listeners out there, Tom Howard, if you're not familiar, he's a guy I call my best friend in pro wrestling. He was the head trainer at Ultimate University, my wrestling school, for many years, and a guy who had stardom with AAA in Mexico, 0-1 in Japan, and a hell of a worker and trainer both. And he fought 6 times in K-1. Very interesting guy. Sorry, Evan, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, Tom was a real good – Tom was a good guy, real soft-spoken, and you just – you know, you always – you never minded being around Tom because he was just a pretty laid-back guy. Rick, I live in an apartment complex here, rather, you know, it's like a little beach community complex here right across the street from the beach in San Clemente. And I was introduced to this little complex from Rick Bassman and Tom and Rick, you know, everybody else had apartments here and Rick had an office here. Like he turned his apartment into an office.
Yeah, and this was like Melrose Place with the pool in the middle overlooking the ocean, and we turned that into – anyway, go ahead. You got the story, yes.
John, I'm telling you, I walked into Rick's office, which was supposed to be an apartment, which I don't think the landlords gave a shit what he was doing in there. It was a full bar. You know, he had an office in the back. He had two hot girls, you know, working for him in the back, you know, and I walked into this place, I thought, man, I want to be a part of this, right?
So I'm still living in one of the apartments 15 years later. I'm still living in the same apartment that I moved to because the apartment came open, and I moved in, and I've been here ever since.
Yeah, you know, and that's like one of the many things that I find interesting about you, Evan, is, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on Joe Millionaire either, but I reference it only because, well, hey, you're known for that to a large degree. It was so monster huge, and in my mind, so there you were, being flown around on private jets, making tons of money to go to strip clubs, being on the cover of Us and People, and in my mind, you've always been a much happier guy when you grow your beard out, grab a drink, and kick back in your apartment in San Clemente. And that, I think that's something. There's a lot to be said for that, and even envied.
Did you ever tell John about the bachelor party or the bachelor, not the bachelor, the bachelor auction that you signed up in around that time?
No, man, you know, I've forgotten so much. I've forgotten more stuff than most people I think ever lived in a lifetime. I'm gonna plead the fifth on this one, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
You approached me and said, Evan, they're doing a charity benefit. They're doing a bachelor auction in Irvine. Rick, who is your ex-wife? Gabrielle?
Oh, my ex-wife, Gabrielle. Yes, of course.
Gabrielle. Rick had a really sweet wife, Gabrielle, and she talked me into it. I said, no, Gabrielle, I want to do it. Rick goes, Evan, come on. Gabrielle thinks it's good for you. You do it. I'm a no talk. I'd grown this beard out, right, at a time where beards weren't real popular. And my mother said, Evan, what are you doing with that beard? You look like you're homeless. And I'm like, I don't know. And literally, tell them, this is 2005. You know, so there's Instagrams with guys with beards, and there's beard balms and beard lotions, and beards weren't hot, you know, they weren't the hot item for guys back then, right? And because I had been on this show, they put me on last. Well, let's put it this way. I walked out to this sea of women, and if they could have scrambled to the door, it wouldn't have been more obvious. I didn't get one. Rick, remember that? I didn't get like no one bid on me. I think
yeah,
I got
this
like
is coming back now.
Bid.
Yeah, it is, right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember this now. I think it's a reminder. Yes. Yeah.
Walking to the back, going, man, that didn't work out too well. Now did it?
Hey, well, nothing ventured, nothing gained, right, Evan?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I suppose. I did. So you come from a humble background. You move out to California. You're approached one day by somebody you never met before about doing this little TV show. And the next thing you know, almost quite literally overnight, you're arguably the most famous person in America, at least for, you know, a certain period of time. And everything that you would think would come with that does. You described some of that before. And then it's pretty quickly over. When, you know, on Talking Tough, we exchange a lot of stories, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll stories, even the fun stuff that made people, you know, what the public perceives them to be. But we talk about the other side also, because you know as well as anybody, and I know this because I know you, that for every positive action, there's a negative action as well, or there's a down for each up. When everything ended, was that a down for you, or was it a relief?
It was a relief.
So prior to that, and I had a little bit of questions, I thought I knew the answer for that, and I was right, which doesn't happen often. What was the toughest part of it? Do you remember any part of that period of time where you're just like, fuck, let me out of this. This is awful.
Well, I did that to myself, because I remember the conversation. I remember I had told you before, I would go out to these cities and I would travel from city to city and I would do these appearances, and I went all as far as Canada. Everywhere. I mean, pick a place, inside North America, Toronto,
Vancouver, Miami, St. Louis. I mean, it was like a wrestler. I mean, literally, it was like a wrestler. I was in a different city every other night or every other two nights. And what I was doing as well, which both of you guys, John and Rick, you guys will get this. I was waking up at 3 in the morning or 3:30, 4 in the morning to do on the West Coast, if I was actually home or wherever I was, to do an interview, a radio interview for my next appearance, say it was on the East Coast. So I would get in late at night, you know, 11, 12 o'clock, 1 in the morning, and I'd have to be up 4 or 5 hours later to do a radio interview, and I'd never experienced this before. And I'd want to just beat the shit out of somebody because I was, you know, because I was just all, you know, I was just tired and I was worn down. And I remember Randy would give me these, God, Rick, it's almost like parallel to wrestling. It was almost like a booking sheet. Randy was my manager, John. That's who I'm referring to. And I keep referring to John because I'm trying to pull him along with all these people. Rick, you know.
No,
these
it's
people.
Good. That's all right. You're
well, I'm trying to. Rick, you know these people. John doesn't. I feel like I'm talking to John, but I'm talking to all your listeners. But Randy would give me these like these bookings like a month out, and it would be all the places I'm going, and it would write next to it what I'm going to make at what date. And I literally called him a couple weeks before, and I said I was done with it. I said I'm done. He goes, "What do you mean you're done?" I said, "I'm done. I can't do this." I said, "I'm about to lose my shit." Now here's a guy that's making 10, 15 grand an appearance, Rick. That's how.
Yeah, and being flown first class or private, probably staying in five-star hotels. Got the hottest chicks in the world throwing themselves at him. I know. I get it. It sounds pretty awful.
Well, that was the funny thing is that I didn't have a whole lot of chicks throwing themselves at me. I wasn't Nikki Sixx, all right? No one was trying to get with this band, all right? I was just this dorky. Seriously, it was this weird thing because that's a whole other story, but I didn't have everybody thinks I had like these groupies that were running around. No one was lining up to fuck Joe Millionaire. I promise you that. I mean, because it was just kind of this weird. You know,
Evan, you shattered so many illusions with that statement.
Yeah,
that's
it's not that I didn't have fun. It's just that it wasn't what people would think. But I told him, I said, "I'm done. I can't. I'm burned out. I am absolutely burned out." And I wasn't saying I'm done forever, but I said, and this is the part you'll get, Rick, I said, I need to take a break for a couple weeks. And Rick said to me, he goes, "You don't get a break." I said, Randy said to me, you don't get a break. And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Evan, the minute you go away, you don't come back. So you need to ride this. You need to ride this horse until it runs its course." And I said, I can't do that. I remember the conversation. I said, "I can't do that, Randy." I said, I'm about to snap. I said, "I'm just tired. And I'm sick of the interviews. I'm sick of the shaking hands and kissing the babies." I said, "I'm tired." And he goes, "All right, that's how you feel." And, he was right. That was it. And he had bookings for me. He had months and a couple more months of bookings. And no telling how much money I'd given up, but I didn't realize it. But I just started being irresponsible too. I mean, I just, you know, I was a sucker for a sad story. A couple months behind on my mortgage. Oh, here you go. You know, my buddy, my brother can't make his car. Oh, here you go. You know, I didn't have a job.
You had a lot of money. You're giving it away now.
Well, yeah, and I didn't have a steady job. It's not like I had a 9-to-5 where I just had a bunch of money in the bank. So I was eating out every night. I was going to clubs. You know, I went and bought. I had that Mercedes. Remember that the big Mercedes I had, and I had some real estate. I bought some real estate, but no one had ever taught me how to manage money. And my father actually was a financial advisor, and he tried to talk to me, and I'm like, "What do you know, old man?"
Of course you did, right?
Right.
You know the answers. I mean, so were you might call depressed at that time, or was it just simply tired?
No, I was just tired. It wasn't a depression. I was just burned out. And, and then it's funny is because everybody, you know, finds something, and I found drinking.
Well, let's talk about that, man. You know, that seems to be, I don't mean to say you're not special, but that seems to be a pretty prevalent topic of conversation amongst the guests here on Talking Tough. You have guys like yourself who seemingly are at the top of the world and have right. it all in the palm of their hand, and something creeps in, whether it's drugs or alcohol, that kind of like takes a chink out of the armor. What happened, man?
Well, no, my nights back when I was tame consisted of, I say tame, but I'm start the night. This was my kind of my thing. I would start a night with a shot of Wild Turkey and an Amstel, and that was my thing for years. I started my night with a shot of Wild Turkey and Amstel, and when one beer turns into three beers and four beers, that's fine. But when it turns into a case, you know, and you're just drinking a case of beer just to drink a case of beer, you know, and it's not for any other particular reason. That my reason was I had nothing else better to do in my life, Rick. I mean, really, that was as sad as it was. I wasn't trying to escape from anything. I just, I would do something as pathetic as go to friends' offices who were working, and I'd walk in and plop down and go, what are you doing? And they're like, we're working. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Because I had, you know, half a mil in the bank, you know, and I thought I was rich, and I wasn't. I mean, I had a lot more than most, but I just was kind of, I just didn't, you know, I didn't think about it because I had nowhere to be. I had no purpose. Does that make sense? I had no reason to wake up in the morning.
Yeah. So you're wandering around aimlessly with a half mil in the bank, drinking a case of beer. What happened next?
Well, I mean, I got out easy. I got out easy because I had a friend of mine who basically, well, I was out to lunch with him one day, and this was, so, 2004, right into 2005, things really started winding down because I got a really good run appearance-wise through 2003, 2004. Remember, I went to Iraq as well. Remember that?
I do remember that, of course. Yeah, I mean, that must have been a thrill, I would think.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. I loved it. I mean, as much as anyone could love going to Iraq.
Well, of course.
But, yeah, no, so around 2005, things started really, that was it. I got a good couple-year run out of it. And a friend of mine just told me, I was at lunch with him. I said, I really don't know what I'm going to do with my life. And he goes, well, you could go back to work. I'm thinking, well, you know, really? And that's when he basically just told me. I got out lucky, Rick, because I had a friend that believed in me and said, look, you know, you got money in the bank. You know, you're good at. I was a contractor for years.
Yeah, he says go back to work. He's referencing going back to contracting, correct?
Yeah, and he just said, look, I'll help you. You got money. You've got plenty of capital. You know, just get back into contracting. And I got to tell you, Rick, I literally he gave me. He was going out of town, and he said, I've got a couple of jobs, and I'm just going to give them to you. You do them. The wife and I are going to go out of town for a couple weeks, and I did them, and I remember calling my dad and going, man, I really feel like I've been paroled. Like, I got a new lease on life. Like, I am back to me. Like, I'm back to what's good and safe in this world.
Let me interrupt for a second, sorry, and take this in, just to take this point. So, you've been traveling nonstop around the country, if not around the world, oftentimes
yeah.
private, if not that,
right.
first class, I'm sure. You're going
yeah,
to
yeah.
things like strip clubs and leaving with 15 grand cash or whatever your pay was for the night.
Right.
You're on the cover of some of the biggest magazines on the newsstand, and you feel like you've hit the mother load when you're back driving a tractor on a job digging a swimming pool.
It's
awesome, man. I'm sure.
It's funny to say, but I mean, and that's why I tell my folks, you know, I got lucky because and a lot of people don't, again, I keep talking to you guys like you don't know, but you guys are more savvy than most. A lot of the people that get into especially reality television, they think that's their fifth break, still does. So if they get a hit, or I was the main guy on Joe Millionaire. I was Joe Millionaire. I was the guy. I was the focus, right? The girls
Absolute
that
force, yes.
the girls that you know, might have made it to, I don't even, what do you call it, like the second or third pick, right? You know, they weren't even the finalists. You know, these girls thought that they were, because they were on TV, which back then, that was a big thing.
Yeah,
because they
it was a much bigger thing then than now, certainly.
Right, and they I mean, I know of people, they weren't even on my show, that ended up moving to L.A., thinking that they, all of a sudden, they were a star. They slept on couches. You know, they refused to work in a restaurant or wait tables or do anything that would be beneath them because they were stars. They had already been on TV. And they ended up, I mean, I know countless people. Some of them ended up homeless, living out of their cars because they didn't get it. And that was one of the reasons, Rick, I was asked, not by Randy because Randy knew better, but I was asked by a few people that had approached me around Randy. They'd gone around Randy to get to me and say, hey, well, do you want to come to a reality show convention? I'm like, a reality show convention? Let's go to the fucking mall. I mean, what's a reality show convention? I mean, what is that? Like, even Comic-Con is something that, you know, or it has some kind of substance behind it, or even a wrestling, you know, to meet wrestlers that entertain you, to give it a reality show convention? And I was going to get paid $2,000-$3,000 to sit in the booth and sign autographs, and I thought to myself, who's going to leave their home on a Saturday to come have Evan Marriott sign an autograph? I mean, it's like, it didn't make sense to me. So to get back to normal life was just something that I was very fortunate to have that happen for me. And it didn't happen for a lot of people.
And you segued back pretty seamlessly, it sounds like. I mean, I look, we know a lot of guys from our world, even our good friends, Tom Howard, Matt Wiese, who you mentioned, and I'm not saying anything they themselves haven't said publicly. A lot of us have really gone through the shit, man, you know, drug abuse and depression and even homelessness for some of us. It never got that low for you. Do you feel like you've lived under a lucky star, or you just make the right choices at the right time? John, you there?
Yeah, but hold on 1 second. Looks like he just literally fell off just as you finished that. You might just have to repeat that. Hold on one second.
Yeah, no problem.
There?
Yes.
Evan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we'll just, that's an easy edit. I'm going to go back to the question. Did you get the question I asked? Probably not, right?
No.
Okay, we'll go right back to that. So Evan, we've talked about, during this podcast, we've talked about Tom Howard, Matt Wiese. These are things that they themselves have said publicly, so I'm not outing them. Guys like Tom, like Matt, like Sean O'Hara, who we both had a close relationship with, myself included in the following example, depression, addiction, homelessness for some of us. You seem to have been able to avoid all those pitfalls, thankfully. Do you feel like you live under a lucky star, or did you make the right choices at the right time?
Well, it doesn't mean that I haven't really come close, you know, because Rick, I remember the date. It was 2008, and it was October 18th, and I was working on a job in Fountain Valley, and I remember the woman at my bank calling and saying, hey, Evan, this is Dee, and your account is overdrawn, and I need you to transfer some money into that account. And I only had one account at this bank, right? So I said, okay, Dee, yeah, I'll get some money in there immediately. And she goes, okay, great. When can we expect that? I said, I'll have it transferred the next day or two. She goes, okay, try to get it in tomorrow. I said, okay, great. And I hung up with her, and I just sat down on the curb because I didn't have any more money. I was dead broke. And that was the one point where I was – so when I say I'd been, you know, 3 years earlier, you know, when I had done my first job,
back in construction, I felt really good. But what I was doing was I was still living like I was on TV. Because I still had that rush of money. And I was still going up to L.A. and staying in five-star hotels. And I was still going out to Mastro's. And I was still throwing around money like I had it. And I did have it, but I just didn't have it coming in. I had it in
right.
But I just didn't have it coming in. You know what I'm saying, Rick? You know.
Oh, yeah.
You've been there. And so I literally sat there on the curb and thought, man, I'm dead broke because I'm overdrawn by $180, $200 every day. And I had just done a job for a friend of mine's father, and he hadn't paid me yet. And my profit margin wasn't much, but I knew if I got that check, I could maybe pull myself out of it. And, yeah, it's weird, Rick, because I managed to stay in this place, but you know, what a lot of people don't know, and not that I would go out and, you know, shout it to the rooftops, town crier around here ringing a bell telling everybody my business, but, you know, there were a lot of times in this apartment where I was house poor because I was living in this apartment, but this apartment was my what's the term? This apartment was my it was, what's the word I'm looking for, Rick? This apartment not defined me, but the apartment was my...
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm having trouble, too. But it was just... Yeah. Well, I don't know if sanctuary is the right word, either. It's almost like, as if
it's
you were
not,
hiding.
No, it's not sanctuary. It's this apartment.
It's almost like you're hiding out there, in a way, it sounds like.
The thing that defined... Not, I don't want to say defined me, but I knew that if I left this apartment, this really big apartment in San Clemente, that would be it. Like if I moved all my stuff out and locked this door, I was a failure.
But, and that's a bad feeling, man. Because you and I both at this point in our lives know that, you know, when one door, at the risk of sounding like a cliche, when one door closes, another one opens, or hundreds of others can. But it sounds like you were in a dark place that I've been many times, where you just don't see any other alternatives or possibilities, and that's a bad feeling, man.
It is. Well, and you know this all too well because I don't know how you've done it, but you jump. You know this story all too well, Rick. You have made a lot of money. A lot of money. I know you have. And you have managed to keep afloat, and we're just guys that figure out that way to do it. Now, was I eating a shitload of SpaghettiOs, yeah. Those 99-cent cans of SpaghettiOs. Of course, I wasn't, you know, I was buying the cheap bourbon, you know, and the cheap beer. But I, you know, and I was passing out every night, you know, because I was trying to drown my sorrows, you know. And I'm just thanking God that I didn't turn to drugs and stuff like that. But I was such a, you know this, I'm not much of a, used to be years ago with Stefan and all you guys when we go out. But I've actually become somewhat of a recluse. And so I just, you know, I didn't associate with enough people to get into something heavier. And I don't know why. So that all happened in 08. And I was dating a girl at the time. And then this went in through 09 where I was just kind of just trying to make it. I was doing anything. I was beg, borrowing, and stealing. No one's stealing. But I was beg, you know, just doing everything I could to stay in the apartment. And then my girlfriend took her life, which I think you know about that.
Yep.
Well, she didn't take her life on my watch. We were split up 2 months, and she had met this new guy, but it was close enough, too close for comfort. And then just for some odd reason, in 2010 and 11, in 2011, I shattered my leg. I ended up getting some disability for that, which allowed me to stay in this apartment and kind of keep going. It was just these things just kept, you know, I just was able to do it. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I waded through these rough waters, man. And then I don't know where it happened. It just ended up turning around for me like in 2012, 13, 14, 15.
Okay, so now flash forward to the year 2020. What does your life look like these days? I'm sure people want to know. We've talked a lot about the past, and this has been interesting. I've heard a lot that I didn't know, so I appreciate everything you shared today. What does your life look like now? What's a day in the life of Evan Marriott like?
It's a lot more structured. I will tell you this, and this is going to make you chuckle. If I could just learn to get back in the gym, I'd probably be a little bit better off. You and Tom have always been good at that, no matter what was going on in your lives. I can't say the same for Stefan. Does John know Stefan?
You know, John may not. Stefan Gamlin, I love to describe Stefan to people because, Evan, you know what's funny? Nobody has ever heard of Stefan. And Stefan is this 6'7", 360-pound, fun-loving, pussy-chasing, alcohol-swilling wild man who would give you the shirt off his back in half a second. And he had a WWF, WWF contract. He played pro football. He was on Battle Dome, which was the Gladiators takeoff. And he also was the guy that single-handedly won the FX special when UPW, Ultimate Pro Wrestling, beat the National Football League on the Tough Man competition. So that's Stefan. And probably the top one of most fun guys to go out with. So there you go. There's Stefan.
Yeah, as long as you could catch him on the second or third double gin and tonic, you were good.
Before he started biting people in public, is that what you mean? Or pulling his pants down?
Well, yeah. Well, we were in Newport. You weren't there. I don't know where you were. You were usually around. You might have been, but it was me and Stefan. I'm sorry, John, I'm going to get off on another story. But it was me and Stefan and Shu, and we were in Newport.
The horseshoe with the reins, yep.
And Stefan was a monster, man. But we went into this bar, and Shu doesn't drink. But I was at the bar. Stefan said, "Give me a double gin and tonic, brother." And I said, "I will." So I'm ordering our drinks. He goes to the bathroom, and I looked at Shu. He'd been in there for a long time. I said, "You know this shit?" And he goes, "I don't know, bro." And I said, "Shouldn't we?" And the minute I was trying to get out, "Shouldn't we go get him?" He comes out of the bathroom. Stefan was bigger than 6'7", wasn't he? Wasn't he like 6'8"?
He was like 6'7", 360. I think that's pretty fair.
Because he was a big dude. I mean, I looked like a baby next to him. And he came out of the bathroom with a guy bigger than him. Did you ever hear this story?
Does not sound familiar. No.
This guy looked like a basketball. He was kind of taller and lanky, but I'd never seen a dude bigger than Stefan at that moment. And Stefan, I thought it was just because Stefan had him by the throat and had him up against the wall. But the guy literally, the guy was on his feet, and Stefan was reaching up, choking, and bringing him out of the bathroom. And supposedly, and this is how nice the guy was, John, supposedly Stefan had been in there taking a shit, taking a leak, and looked over, and the guy, I don't know if he was I don't think he was assaulting a girl, but the guy had a girl in. Stefan didn't like it, so Stefan grabbed him and dragged him out. And the bouncers, this is how big this dude was, John, and the bouncers, instead of grabbing Stefan and taking him out, looked at Shu and I and said, "Can you get your buddy out of here?"
Of course. Bouncers aren't going to get involved in that. Hell no.
And yeah, and Shu looks at me and goes, Are you gonna get him out? I'm like, "What am I going to do?" You know, and Stefan's like 4 or 5 double gin and tonics deep at this point.
Oh, I know that Stefan all too well, yes.
Oh, yeah. We got him out of there. But that was just, it was just one of those nights with Stefan. I don't even know where the hell I was going with that. But
hey, you know, it's a fun story, and I'm thinking I should probably have Stefan on because he would be, even though people for some reason don't remember him, he is one of the most hysterical human beings in the history of this planet. He'd be fun to talk with, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he'd be great.
Evan, you know what? I know that I don't know how much time you have left, but I think at a certain point before we end this interview, I'm thinking we ought to try to dial Stefan in and surprise him for a second. That might be kind of funny.
Yeah, I don't have his number. I don't think I do.
I have like 17 phone numbers for him, but I'm pretty sure I know what the current one is. So
he has a different job every year, so I don't know.
Every half year, I know he does. That's just a nature. But Yeah, we'll see if we can't find him before this is out. That'd be pretty cool. All right, so you're living in San Clemente now, and I know you're a contractor and you're working regularly, even during these down times when everybody is being laid off and or being furloughed, as they call it, and you're working and you're in that same beautiful apartment. One thing that I'm very aware of what you do regularly is you write, and you're probably like, what the hell is he talking about? But, dude, your posts on Facebook are it's some of the funniest shit I've ever seen in my entire life. And I don't know if you're attempting to be funny. My guess is probably not. I think you're just calling it as you see it. I believe you refer to your place as Casa de Naked Land. Is that right?
Yeah.
Right. Sorry, man. I told you everything was fair game on this podcast, right? So you live in Casa de Naked Land, and of course, we're probably all wondering why it's called that. But what I love, man, is, you know, I don't want to say you're a very regular guy. I don't think that would be doing you justice or be remotely accurate. But, you know, you're definitely, I don't think you have political leanings. I know I don't. And we never talk about politics on this show, but I have to ask, you comment a lot about the state of the world and particularly the state of our nation. What are your feelings about, like, what's going on? And that's a really general, big question, but I want to ask it this way. What's your feelings on, like, the mood in this country right now?
On the what in this country?
Like, the mood of this country. Like, To lead a bit, for me, I feel like we're living in very divisive times, where I think it's almost been, like, become acceptable for one person to be, you know, downright mean to another, whether they know him or not. And that's something that bothers me on a daily basis. That'd be my answer if you asked me that question.
What's your take on
what's going on out there?
Okay, I'm going to give you my take, and when I give you my take, this is actually probably a good time to express this feeling because I've thought about it. I've told a few people about it, but very few people will get it. You and John will get it. Why? Because you're wrestling fans. I have told people that in 2016, America went through Stone Cold Steve Austin syndrome.
Huh, interesting. Okay, I'm vibing with that already. I get it. Go ahead.
They want somebody to come in, talk shit, buck the system, you know, slam two beers together, pour them down their throat, tell the boss he's a piece of shit, you know, just and we're not going to take it anymore. And that was what the Trump supporters were.
Yep.
They got a guy up there who makes fun of people, calls them names. You know, Trump doesn't drink. I don't know if people know that, but he brags that he doesn't drink. His brother died of alcoholism. I don't know if you guys knew that.
No.
But that's his big reason. My brother died of alcoholism, and I never touched the stuff. He told me, you know, don't ever touch the stuff, and I never did. I mean, I remember him saying it.
Okay.
But that is the attitude era with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and I've told people that I think America went through an attitude era in 2016.
Well, I never thought of it that way, but I would dare say that's a very fair analogy. Okay, go ahead.
It's the only way. It's the best way that I can. They were sick of the normal. They were sick of the typical, and they got this guy in there, who I just said, I'll say it again, who's going to buck the system, go against the grain, start using choice words that had never been heard of on network television. I mean, you can use parallels. You know what I mean?
So now I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to say, first of all, I categorically agree with what you're saying, but now I'm going to put you on the spot. So Stone Cold during the Attitude Era, you're right. I get it because, as you said, I was a fan. I love the character. I like Steve as a person. He's somewhat of a friend, but I love the character. You're right. So
I like him. I liked him until I met him.
No, fair enough. But we're not talking about Steve now. We're talking about the country. I was talking about Steve, so my apologies. How do you feel about what's happening in this country from 16 to 20?
Oh, I there's no
this attitude era. How does this strike you?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind that there is. Okay, there's a man that we elect I'd say every 4 years, but okay, so every 4 to 8 years, okay, there's a person, I want to say man, but I don't want to be chauvinistic about it, right?
Right.
But it's up to this point, there's a man that we elect every 4 to 8 years that we look to be a representative of our, of who we are as people, okay? I had somebody, I could not figure out what it was about, let me back up, when Trump announced his candidacy, I thought, oh shit, everybody, just like everybody, I thought, oh shit, you know, but I could get on board with this, here we go.
Yeah, that's somebody, interesting, I have to admit, I thought the same thing at the time, okay.
Exactly, okay, so you know where I'm going, okay, so something different, something new, right? And then he opened his mouth, and I went, I don't know if I want to get off, I think I want to get off this ride. And I just look, I try to keep it very simple, stupid. I want to look at a president. I don't want my first impressions of a president to be, is that a wartime president? That's going to come. That's why a president surrounds himself with, you know, with people that know, like, people that know military and people that, and health advisors and people that know, understand pandemics and stuff. That's a, but I want a president that if he was a teacher, I would not mind sending my child into his room every day at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning to spend 8 hours with him to teach my child. And I don't get that from that guy. I don't get that from that guy. And that's as simple and as vanilla as I can be about it.
Well, you know what? It sounds like we share very similar views, because I don't want to say I'm apolitical, but I'm definitely not educated politically. And I have, you know, close friends of mine for many years who are, you know, on the cusp of being in the know with the news and the happenings in the country, and they could expound on this much more intelligently than I could. But I'm right where you are. It's about the vibe, and it's about the way people are feeling and the way people conduct themselves, and I think they follow the lead that is put out from the top position. And, all right, we don't get political on Talking Tough, but I guess I'm going to get political and express my views for the first time.
I don't mean to cut you off, but before you finish that, what have you got on your back? You have a tattoo on your back, and what is that tattoo?
Oh, dude, I've got an absolute giant mess of tattoos all over my back that have there's no synchronicity whatsoever.
Okay, let me help you along here. Don't you have a tattoo that says coexist?
I do.
There you go. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I do. And coexist, for people that have seen the bumper sticker, it's made up of the C is the Muslim moon, and the X is the Jewish star, and the T is the Christian cross. Yeah, so it's about everybody, as you said, coexisting and getting along together. And that's what I don't like about what's happening in the country right now. I think the man on top, and as he was close to getting elected, I'm almost ashamed to say it now, I used to say, well, if he gets elected, at least it'll be entertaining. And it was for a while, man, but I think it's beyond that now. I think the mood is divisive out there. I think it's mean. And I'd like to I would just like to live in a, it's not very political or very educated, but I like to live in a warmer and fuzzier place, that's all.
Well, I look at a guy that knows what buttons to push to get his voter, his supporter riled up.
Without
and
question.
That's not what a president is about. And when you might not like what is written about you in the New York Times, president, you keep your mouth shut. That's none of your concern. That you're here to run a country, not you're not here for a popularity contest. If you were, you would have won the popular vote. I hate to say that, but I just, he's as unpresidential as I can.
I'm going to say it here first. John, can you give us a drum roll, please?
Yeah.
All right, there's our drum roll. Thank you.
Yeah.
You ready?
I can't believe
Marriott.
John's still on, Frank.
Marriott, 2024.
No, come on. I, no. I just, no.
We need a change. change. But you know what? Let's not get too deep into that. It sounds like we're on the same page. Evelyn, if I know that you do everything, I don't know, it may not be intentional, but it seems like you do whatever you can to stay out of the public eye. If people want to know more about you or follow you anywhere, is there anywhere to do that, or you just prefer to leave that as it is?
No, there's nowhere. I mean, I have my Facebook page, which is, I don't know if it's been a blessing or a curse. I didn't start that page, by the way. It was a friend of mine's girlfriend that started it back in 2009. And it just, a few people that I hadn't seen in years were, friended me, and it just took off from there.
I know you get into some energetic debates on your page, and it's just under your name, Evan Marriott, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
but I mean, I
don't max out at friends. People can follow you there, and I get I think an entertaining and unique take on a lot of what's happening in the country at this point. So I hope you don't mind, but I'm putting it out there for people to take a look at your page because I like to look at it. I think it's funny.
No, I don't mind. But I tell you what is funny is that, and you've seen this, both you guys have seen this. It is comical to me, and they are fun to look at. But man. It's amazing how social media is nowadays, with especially with the females out there, and they've all got no one knows who the hell they are, but they all have a public figure page, like they're like, you know, a Kardashian or there's some major celebrity. And I'm thinking, you know, I had a girl once tell me I was out and we were eating dinner, and she wasn't with us. She was at the bar, and I was with a group of people, and I started talking to her, and I said, hey, you know, can I get your number? She goes, oh, just go to my public figure page on.
Oh God!
I'm like,
which you have like 200
like,
fans or something like that. That's
that?
Awesome.
I'm like,
that's fantastic.
You're not going to give me your number. You want me to go to your public figure page on some social media? I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good. and you know me, Rick. I'm not gonna. I would never throw back at her. You know, come on. Look, I've been on Howard Stern 3 times. I've been on this. I've done this. Who the fuck? I'm like, you got a public figure page? I don't even have a public figure page. And I'm like, come on, really? It's not that great, you know.
No, it is so much like that. And this is a bit of an aside, but I have to say it at the risk of putting ourselves over. You know, I think about you and Tom Howard and Sean O'Hare and Stephon, and I, despite the fact that I'm a foot shorter and 200 pounds less than all you guys, I like to sometimes put myself in that group. And I think for as much shit as we all went out and caused and as much havoc as we wreaked or hell as we raised, I think part of what bonded us was we're always cool with the woman, man. We're not going to give them a bad time, but you know we're going to be nice, we're going to be respectful. But if they're going to be like that, then later days, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I remember. Yeah, no, I remember many nights when we won't get into that shit.
Now, do you have a girlfriend these days?
What did you say?
Do you have a girlfriend these days?
No. I was seeing a girl last year and didn't work out, and I've just been kind of single ever since. But I don't worry about that.
No, you and me both. Just curious. I'm sure some people out there were wondering that. I was wondering it, so I wanted to ask. And you know, I get that you like to live a like even keeled, you know, simple life these days. I know I very much aspire to that. But that said, like what gets you excited these days? What are you looking forward to?
I'll tell you what I'm starting to appreciate more, and I think it's something that I'm trying not to think about what the time that I've lost. But I'm trying to, and this is going to sound really corny, but I mean, how corny can it be? I'm trying to really appreciate the time I have with my family these days.
Yeah, you're really close with your parents, for instance, right?
Yeah, my mother and my father are still alive. I'm really fortunate for that. They're 77 going on 50. And I don't think they know that they're 77, and that's a great thing. But you look back. I was talking to my sister about this over the holidays this past year, this past Christmas. It's just you don't realize how that time slips away until it slips away, you know. And I know that, you know, our you know, we're all on a timer, and I'm starting to call them more. I mean, and I know you know, I just that I'm trying to appreciate the things that I didn't appreciate years ago, that when I actually had the money to travel back and see them, you know what I mean? And I do now, but I mean, it just, I'm trying to just appreciate family more, because I know a lot of people don't have family. I know people that don't have a father or a mother or either. And it's just, you know, I want to just take advantage of the blessings that I have.
That's great, you know, and there's a huge lesson in that, I think, for everybody. I'm one of the orphans you mentioned a moment ago, and, you know, I would love to have, you know, a dad, a mom around still, and I don't, but I don't regret what I don't have. It's, you know, I've got four dogs, and this may sound corny. You
right.
were corny a few moments ago, but I'm like so much these days just appreciating being the best, you know, dog dad that I can, and...
Well, you do a lot with pit bull rescue and stuff like that. It's amazing, Rick. I mean,
that's a huge part of my life. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you eat it up. You love it. You eat it, sleep it, and breathe it.
Yep. But yeah, no, thank you. Absolutely. But yeah, I think the lesson though is that in what you said, man. And if everybody, you know, everybody could stop for a second and take stock in what they have, it'd be a much happier, friendlier world, wouldn't it? I'm getting a little philosophical now, but I truly believe what I just said.
Yeah, it's a lot of truth to that.
So, Evan, man, it's been really good having you on and good catching up with you. Wow, I mean, I don't even know how to wrap this up. From, you know, from a guy who, you know, Evan Marriott, you know, a.k.a. Joe Millionaire, who absolutely looked to be on top of the world, you know, what people would perceive to be on top of the world with the magazine covers and the viewers and the television ratings, to a guy who I'm really happy to hear. It sounds like he's on top of the world with the life he's living right now, man. And I really appreciate hearing about that.
Yeah, you just got to keep it simple, stupid, Rick.
That's cool. That's going to be my mantra for the rest of the day, man. Maybe the rest of the year. Hey, Evan, man, thank you so much. And I really, really appreciate you being on. And you have any parting words from the wise for us?
No, I just I appreciate you reaching out to me and, you know, and, you know, for a guy that has never felt like he was really relevant at all, even though when I, you know, I've done probably a lot more than most. I just, you know, I appreciate you reaching out and acknowledging that, and I appreciate your kind words. This has been fun. It's been a good little couple hour escape.
Right on, man. Hey, Evan, thank you very much. It's Rick Bassman here on Talking Tough, in the wilds of Maui. Talking to my longtime friend, Evan Marriott, on the beach in San Clemente, signing off on Talking Tough. Thank you, Evan.
Thank you.
John, we good?
All good. You're clear.
All right. Evan, you still there?
Nope, he dropped off.
All right, cool. What'd you think?
Awesome. Loved it.
Dude, that was really good, wasn't it?
That was excellent, yes.
Dude, I love that interview. That might be my favorite one now.
I know, I was just thinking he may have just passed Malibu.
Yeah. Huh, wow. Do you know what I didn't miss during that interview?
Joe Millionaire.
Chad texted me going, oh, we have 58 minutes. We got to wrap up in 2 minutes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Right. That's what I didn't miss. Oh man, that was good, right?
Yeah, that definitely. I think it's my favorite so far. I had Malibu up there as my favorite, but I think that passed it.
Oh, we have the same one, and we have the same first and second. Then okay, good. Right on. All right, cool. Thank you. And you don't mind being brought into it, right?
No, not at all.
Okay, cool. I think that's kind of cool to be able to do that, actually.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right. And, he's an interesting guy, huh?
Oh, my God, yeah. Awesome stories, too.
I know, right, man? That was really cool. Right on. Good. Yeah, Jason, tomorrow night, I'm going to prepare for that one. We should talk a little bit about that tomorrow if we can before the interview. Jason Flatt?
Yes. Yep.
Did you look him up at all yet?
Yeah, he's the he was. It's a lot of like Pitbull rescue stuff, but it's interesting when you type his name in originally, it goes to like all these other like random people. I didn't think that was like a common name, but there was a bunch of other people with that name.
Oh, okay, okay. No, he's you know, I don't know Jason well. We met on the phone just about a month ago, and we've become like phone friends pretty quickly. Have you seen a photo of him?
I don't know if it's him though. I hate that when you look up something and you don't know if that's really him or not.
Well, I'll describe this, and you'll know if you've seen him or not. The guy's face is absolutely covered with tattoos.
Let me see if that was the right picture.
Like from his chin to his forehead, he's covered.
Yes. The picture I saw, because he had the dog, you couldn't really see the front of his face, just the top of his head. But
yep.
now that I zoom in, yeah, he's got it on his eyes, got it on his cheek, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Dude, this is going to be like one of the nicest people you'll ever speak with. He's done like real federal time, and he severely suffers from depression also. And the guy is like staying alive because he's got a mission to help dogs. So there's a guy after my own heart right there for sure. So we'll be able to vibe on that level, absolutely. And that's a little
nice.
Bit about him in any case.
Nice. Yeah, he's a scary looking dude. That's funny.
right, yeah. Yeah, you can't always judge a book by the cover, as I like to say.
Yes, very true.
All right, good. Yeah, I think that one was good, man. You know what? Let's keep with the four that we're gonna do on the intro, and maybe go with Evan as the first one we put up after the introduction of the four. And
okay.
See if we can get a real traction first, and then we'll push like how hard that was a good interview, and that's the one that's coming next. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right, cool. Good deal. All right. Well, I got to go back to write bios, man.
Nice. Very good. I'm going to start editing and stuff, putting this stuff together.
Yeah, fix up the drop-offs and whatnot.
Yep.
And then what else? So I guess we're all welcome to the jungle. What part of that song are you going to use, do you know?
It's going to be the beginning part. And I just got to talk to our guy, Dan. He's going to help us put it together
okay.
at first, for at least the first couple.
Okay,
I'm going to have
cool.
him. But I want to make sure I give him, like, a clean copy when I send it to him and he puts it together. But it's definitely going to be the beginning part, but it'll be instrumental. So it'll sound good.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Okay. Good deal. Well, thank you, sir. And have a good night, and I'm going to have some more stuff to you soon, and I guess you got to build out that page.
Yes.
Oh, excellent. All right, well, I know it's getting late your time, 4, 5, 6. Oh, wow, it's almost 11 o'clock your time.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
All right, you have yourself a great night.
You too. Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.